Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. We'll be in-depth on the president's newest order on funding for women's health care, but first to both domestic and international politics. The political junkie Ken Rudin joins us as usual. Hey, Ken, how are you?
Good morning, Curry.
Sorry about that. Emily Tamkin is with us. She's a staff writer for Foreign Policy magazine, where she's been covering the French election. Emily, I have your name right, right? And welcome.
You do, yeah.
Good to have you here. Ken, I wonder if you interpreted President Trump's tweeted prediction last week that the shooting on the Champs-Élysées would have an impact on the French election as, without being explicit, as support for Marine Le Pen.
Well, that is the analysis. It took me to shut the government shutdown. My voice shut down this morning. But
sorry about that.
Me too. But yeah, it seems like without endorsing her explicitly, it seems like what he said throughout his whole campaign too, that political violence, extreme violence by the Islamic groups could lead to people like Le Pen, like Donald Trump, doing well in the elections, and it almost seemed like he welcomed it.
Emily, does what the president of the United States, and particularly Donald Trump, want matter at all to the way French voters might be thinking about this, or would it have more influence than we would think?
I think it depends on who the U.S. president is, right? So while he didn't explicitly endorse her, he did explicitly call her the strongest candidate. However, Trump is not particularly popular in France, so I think the fact that Obama came out and did sort of a phone video with Macron, that would probably be more influential or better received by the French electorate, with the exception of the sort of staunch Le Pen voters.
Emily, I was reading some of the ongoing coverage over the weekend in The Guardian of London, and they were asking French voters about their view, specifically of Macron. And here's a couple of kind of interesting opinions. René from, he's a police officer in Versailles. It's more a default choice. I don't want an extremist in charge, nor a corrupt Fillon. I hope that Macron will take some measures to make the country go forward instead of living in fear. Here's Guillaume, 36, from Dordogne, who says, I'm not convinced he'll be a great president, but I'm convinced the other three would be a disaster. You know, this, we don't love our choices, but it's, you know, it's like the lesser of all of the not great choices here. Sounds a lot like kind of the feeling that a lot of American voters had in our election, doesn't it?
It does. I think that, however, you know, those two quotes aside, I think the second point of Renee's quote is really, the first quote you read is really important, this idea that we don't want to be afraid, we want someone who will take us forward. That's the sentiment in France that Macron was able to tap into, right? Even the name En Marche Forward suggests that this was the candidate who was going to position himself as the optimist, as someone who was going to beat back nationalism while making an economic case. So I don't think, you know, I think the fact that he did get the largest percentage of votes of all the candidates suggested it's not just anybody, because it wasn't just anybody but Le Pen, right? It was anybody but Le Pen or Fillon or Hamon or Mélenchon or, what is it, the seven other candidates.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I think there is some excitement. I don't think it's fair to say that there isn't excitement about Macron. What I do think Macron needs to do in the next 2 weeks, and this is not just me specifically, you know, but what experts say Macron needs to do in the next 2 weeks is not just say you can't vote for Le Pen because she's scary, but also to say to her voters something that Hillary was not able to do. Sorry, Hillary Clinton was not able to do in the 2016 election, which is to say it's not just that you can't give in to fear. It's also that while I hear you on being economically disillusioned, her policies will make you economically worse off, not better off.
I was just going to say, Emily, that's such a great point. Ken, I want to bring that back to our election. That's exactly as Emily says, a connection that Secretary Clinton was really not able to make when she would talk about why Donald Trump would be so bad for the country.
Well, there are those who say that what Hillary Clinton, the reason, one of the reasons Hillary Clinton failed as a candidate was that she didn't make the argument so much for her candidacy. It's one thing to make the argument against Donald Trump, and she did that very effectively, I thought, for most of the campaign. But there are critics who say that she didn't make the case for why she should be elected, why she should continue the Obama legacy, whatever you want to call it. So there is it reminds me a lot of what we're seeing today in France. And the fact is that what Donald Trump based his election on, and it was the fact that nothing seemed to be working. And you could make the case that a lot in France was not working with the stagnant economy, with the unemployment, with the increased terrorist attacks. Something wasn't working, and that you know, that leads to votes for candidates like Le Pen or like Donald Trump.
You know, Emily, I was wondering if there was a lot written about after Brexit and Trump's election that much of the Western world was heading towards this more, you know, the criticism of Donald Trump, authoritarian kind of isolationist looking inward sort of government. I wonder if what's happening in France tells us, well, yes, we might have gone through that, but it was somewhat short-lived, and now voters are looking outward again. Is there any bigger theme here to what happened in France?
You know, I think the big theme, I think we will see whether or not French voters sort of reject their version of nativist populism on May 7th when they have the second round, because Macron and Le Pen are two very, I mean, you really couldn't have a clearer choice between do you want to look outward toward Europe or do you want to look inward, then you will have. But the rejection that the French people made this past Sunday was of traditional parties, right? Because they did reject the political establishment, and they did reject the I think it's, since 1958, this is the first time that we've had a second round without one of either the socialists or the Republicans. So it isn't that the French people said, yeah, we're okay with the status quo. They didn't. Macron formed his movement, a year ago? So there was, you know, there was a sort of great shift in France. It just wasn't toward, at least not yet, it wasn't toward the sort of populist Donald Trump Brexit. It was toward new movements, new National Front isn't a new party, but toward away from the traditional political parties of the French establishment.
We're getting some insight this morning, as we always do, from the political junkie Ken Rudin. But we also asked Emily Tamkin to be with us. She's a staff writer for Foreign Policy magazine, and she has been following the elections in France. And so taking a look at some domestic politics, but also some international politics and where they overlap. If you have a question about what happened in France, about some of President Trump's interest in what's happening in France and in Europe, about some of the overlap, as mentioned, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. You can also tweet me at @CarrieMPR. You know, Ken, it seems that President Trump's view on the value of Europe and of the EU and of NATO all seems really volatile. I mean, during the campaign, he was talking about how he thought NATO was irrelevant. Now, recently, he said that he thought it was relevant again. He seems to not have a true core conviction about what Europe is and where it fits into the international world order.
I think my response is, you think? I mean, remember what he said about China, of course, China being a currency manipulator. And suddenly he said, well, you know something? I said that before, but that's no longer the case. And what you say about NATO is exactly right. He was not elected having core principles. We know that he was once upon a time supporter of abortion rights, a supporter of Hillary Clinton and Nancy Pelosi. So we know that. I think what people like about Donald Trump is the fact that he's not stuck to a rigid ideology and he can make decisions on the fly. What gets people nervous about Donald Trump is the fact that because he has no core philosophy, he can just, you know, surprise and stun his allies at the over a tweet, for example, when there are other, you know, if you think of previous American presidents, there was a core of principles there that at least brought some security and confidence in its allies.
You know, let me follow up on that, Emily, and ask you what you think someone like Angela Merkel or Theresa May really think of working with President Trump.
You know, I think that both of them, first of all, I think that part of it, it's not just that he has that, you know, as Ken said, that he doesn't necessarily have the same strongly held convictions as his predecessors. Some of the policies that he presented while campaigning, he had been holding since the 80s or 90s, like with respect to Germany, with respect to Japan, with respect to China. And I think either sort of becoming more aware of the reality of the situation, or perhaps just working within the American political and military apparatus has led him to change some of those previously very long-held views, number one. Number two, I think the reality is, you know, President Trump said in his interview with the AP this past weekend that, you know, he and Merkel had tremendous chemistry. I don't know that that is a view that's necessarily held by the German chancellor, but the reality is that Europe and Germany and Great Britain need to work with the United States at this point in human history, right? So whether or not they're... look, I'll put it this way. If Merkel can explain to Trump, no, you can't sign a trade deal with just Germany, it has to be with the EU, and she explains that 11 times, and the result of that is that he says, okay, I'll make a trade deal with the EU, that's ultimately good for Merkel. Right?
Got it. Yeah.
So it may not be her favorite phone call of the week, the one that they had at 9:30 today, but it's one that the reality is that she needs to have. And so does Trump, right? There's no working with Europe without working with Germany, at least not in 2017.
Ken, I think I heard you snorting in the background there. on the chemistry between Trump and Merkel. Why?
I forgot to mute my microphone. No. I mean, body language is so important. And you watched Merkel's response to what things what Trump was saying, the fact that there's a lack of handshake, the fact that he would just, you know, she would almost roll her eyes at some of the things he was saying. Look, he's done this. He's getting the same reaction with Congress back home, and the fact that he's pushing certain things that either can have no chance of coming to fruition or whatever, but there are the European leaders, world leaders, and congressional leaders are all looking at Donald Trump. They'll take what they can get, but there's a lot of things that they just say that, oh my goodness, this can't be really happening.
Ken, stay with me for a minute. Emily, thank you so much for your insight and your views on the French election. Going to be interesting to see what happens on May 7th.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Emily Tamkin with us. She's a staff writer of Foreign Policy. I want to come right back, Ken, to what you just said. Right now, Congress is in this situation of having to confront the funding appropriations for the wall. I mean, not only don't Democrats want to pay for this or don't believe in it, but Republicans. President Trump doesn't even really have much allegiance from his own congressional allies in Congress, from his own party. What gives on that? What does it mean?
Well, they want to support their president. They really do. But this push for wall funding, for border wall funding, that almost may result in a government shutdown. I don't think that would happen, but it could happen, is anathema not only to Democrats, but to Republicans as well. They say, we don't need this battle. This was an argument. This was a fight that Donald Trump created on his own, that Mexico would pay for it. And lo and behold, once upon a time, Mexico was paying for it. Now, well, Mexico will eventually pay for it. Nobody buys that. And nobody thinks that the $22 billion that is going to cost, that is expected, this wall is expected to cost, should be borne by American taxpayers, especially when he was elected on the fact that we wouldn't have to pay for it.
Okay, so what happens then to us if he really can't get the money out of Congress for this? What's going to happen to that? He's been talking about that even before he officially announced as a candidate.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, the deadline is Friday, which is interesting. It's the day before his so-called 100 days in office. I know we all make a big deal of Trump and any president, and it's 100 days. We've been doing that since FDR. But I mean, look, it's an important guideline, a mark to see how well you've done in your early 100 days as president. Now, of course, you know, in JFK's first 100 days, it was the Bay of Pigs invasion, which was one of the biggest blunders in his administration and one of the biggest foreign policy blunders in American history in the 20th century. Yet that doesn't define Kennedy as a bad president. So, but still, having said that, I don't think he wants to have a shutdown in his first 100 days, but he does have the Democrats to blame. You know, he doesn't like the fact that the health care bill didn't progress, the fact that there's problems with the tax cut and the tax overhaul. That is a problem among Democrats. He can point to that's among Republicans.
Exactly.
He can point to Democrats saying, well, if we're not going to get an agreement, it's because the Democrats won't support me on the wall. But the fact is, the Republicans don't want any part of it either.
By the way, we're going to cover that. We're going to do a show in depth on this tax proposal that he's laying out on Wednesday. And we're already hearing leaders in Congress say, it could take a year. It could take at least through the end of the year and maybe more to get something passed. And I know to some degree that's because it's a very complex kind of legislation. But a lot of what he's been talking about is something that doesn't seem to have any constituency in Congress either. I mean, a few pieces of what he wants, like the corporate tax cut, where I think there may be some bipartisan support for that. But a lot of the other measures, no one supports.
Yes, and within the Republican Party, there's a tremendous amount of disunity over what they are pushing for. If you think about the extra taxes you want to put on exports, imports coming in from Mexico, Paul Ryan will say that this will make everything cost 20% more. Donald Trump says absolutely not. I mean, there's a reason why there hasn't been a significant tax overhaul since 1986, because it's difficult. You know, it's interesting when Donald Trump says, "Wow, I didn't know healthcare could be so difficult," or
complicated. I think he said, right?
Or you're right. Or with North Korea, when he was talking to China, "I didn't know how difficult it was with North Korea." This is what happens when you elect somebody with absolutely no political experience.
I'm sure he's not paying a lot of attention to the Wall Street Journal NBC poll because, you know, he disavows a lot of the traditional polling that gets done.
Unless he's doing well,
that's true.
Right.
There's a number in their poll that I thought was really interesting. He's down 7 percentage points from the last time they polled on firm and decisive. What does that tell you? Even some of his supporters are apparently questioning, because that's a big number and a big drop.
It is. I mean, if you think of what Donald Trump stands for, you always thought of him as firm and decisive.
Exactly.
I mean, the impression he tried to give to voters as he was campaigning was that, you know, he is a leader, unlike the less than firm foreign policy of Obama and Hillary Clinton. He was a guy who would stand up for core principles. And we see that clearly voters are not seeing that either. Also, his numbers regarding honesty and trustworthiness is down to 28%.
Wow.
These are all record lows for a new president.
Speaking of Obama, so he is back from whatever foreign island he's been spending some time on. Literally, I think he was in Fiji or somewhere like that. Wasn't he?
I thought it was Staten Island, but I'm not sure.
No, I think he was further afield than that. So he's got a schedule of some speeches, one of which is in Chicago. What role do you think he's going to play, not just only as a critic of Trump's, because it sounds like that's going to be pretty muted, but what does now emerging and giving some speeches about some of his core principles mean to the political scene, Ken?
I think it's very important for the Democratic Party, especially because there is no obvious leader. If you think of people like Bernie Sanders, for example, whom a lot of Democrats say he should be as one of the leaders in the post-Clinton, post-Obama Democratic Party, then you have this. You see this special election coming up in Omaha for mayor of Omaha, where Bernie Sanders is basically backing an anti-abortion rights Democratic candidate. A lot of pro-choice Democrats are saying, wait a second, this is not the way the party should be. Barack Obama, I'm sorry about this, has a tremendous opportunity to set the party straight, especially in the wake of this unexpected defeat. But I suspect that he's going to do a lot of similar to what George W. Bush did, and that is he's not going to be an anti-Trump advocate, but at least set the path away the Democrats should be.
Some lozenges and hot tea, my friend.
Oh, my.
Rest
oh
your
my.
Voice. But good to talk to you. I hope you feel better.
Thanks. We're going to shut down not the government, but my voice. Right.
Ken Rudin, the political junkie, with us on Mondays, whether he's feeling great or a little bit under the weather.